Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show. Hoy ball is over. After three-plus seasons, Fred Hoiberg is no longer the head coach of the Chicago Bulls. That job now belongs to Jim Boylan. So how much closer are the Bulls to being a playoff team? And why fire Fred now? Bears almost won a game they had no business being in late. The offense struggled, the defense stumbled, and the coach made some questionable calls. Bears lose to the Giants despite a late rally to tie the game. So was it just one bad game at the end of Chase Daniel's tenure as starter? Wait, Mitch is coming back next week, right? And welcome into Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Hope you had a good weekend to start your week. I'm David Kaplan. Our panel for today's show from the Chicago Sun-Times, we call him Fins. He is Patrick Finley. Mark Schanowski, host of all of our Bulls coverage here on the network at NBC Sports. David Haw, one half of the Mully and Haw show on The Score, as well as a writer for the Tribune. And our guy Adam Johns, Chicago Sun-Times. All right. Let's get started with some basketball. Fred Hoiberg found out this morning when he arrived at the Advocate Center that he was being replaced, fired with a little more than a year left on his contract. All right, so they make a move. Jim Boylan comes in. Please enlighten all the Bulls fans out there, and you're as close to this team as anyone, why things will be any different just by changing chairs on the deck of the Titanic.
Well, it seems like in any sport, they'll go from a soft-spoken, mild-mannered coach to a yeller and a screamer, and I think that's kind of what they're doing again. John Paxson made a point of saying the team had lost its energy, it had lost its spirit, they weren't playing hard enough. He challenged the players to raise their level of competitiveness, and I think that's a reflection on what we thought was lacking with Fred Hoiberg as head coach. Jim Boylan has only been a head coach on the college level at Utah, but he's worked with Rudy Tomjanovich, he's worked with Jeff Van Gundy, he's worked with Greg Popovich. He has a good background. He's an NBA lifer. He knows the game very well. I think he's going to demand accountability, and now that he's going to get a full roster back in the short term with Chris Dunn and Bobby Portis close to returning, if a guy makes a mistake, if he doesn't hustle back on defense, if he doesn't run the play the right way, you take him out and you sit him on the bench, you put somebody else in. Hoiberg only had nine players. You could argue he only had six players that were NBA quality. He didn't have a lot of options.
You know, I think this is hitting reset on the rebuild.
And, yeah.
You know, they know that they're going to get the players back. The arrow is going to start pointing up again. It gives them an opportunity to kind of change the culture a little bit. The coach at any level can control two things, attitude and effort. And Fred Hoiberg wasn't reaching these players for whatever reason. They had tuned them out. This was a different feel this year, off to a slow start than it was a year ago.
Is there a little irony here that we're describing a coach who sounds a lot like Tom Thibodeau?
There's no doubt about it.
It's somebody who gets their – I mean, Tibbs' teams always played hard. They always got back on defense. The Bulls decided that wasn't good enough. And now they want somebody who has those very traits, right?
Tom Thibodeau could not get along with people in the organization.
He didn't play well in the sandbox.
That was the biggest problem, not with the players, though.
Well, who was he coaching, though, Hoiberg? Like you said, he had six players. What happened to the idea of giving him a chance with marketing, with the full roster?
I think they had made this decision a long time ago. I think it really was a question of when they were going to execute it. We heard with the Blackhawks, when they had the five-game losing streak, that was the time that they were going to launch Joel Quenneville. But I'm sure the organization had decided long before then that a change was needed. I think it's very similar. I don't think it's any secret, even though Paxson protested that I was involved, you know, intimately in the hiring, that this was a Gar Forman-based recommendation on Fred Hoiberg, and Pax probably rubber-stamped it.
So where is Gar Forman today?
Well, he was at the news conference, but he was not in a speaking role.
John Paxson's taken over as a spokesman again, and I think that probably for the good of the Bulls. You know, he articulated today why they made the move. You don't have to agree with it. Most people don't agree with anything that comes out of the mouth of Gar or Pax, just be out of habit. But I think that they were looking for an opportunity. We don't really know if Fred Hoiberg can or can't coach. I don't think he was ever given a fair shot here because the first season didn't have the pieces that fit the offense. The second season was sabotaged by Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade. And last year, they tanked half the year.
And there were some flashpoints this season. You know, you had the incident with Wendell Carter Jr., a 19-year-old kid in the locker room after a game questioning, we tend to spread apart when adversity hits. We don't have a voice in the locker room that can call people together. We should try to, you know, be together more as a group. That was one.
And how about Zach Levine?
And then Zach Levine waving off the play in San Antonio was two.
I get a chance to talk to Pax tomorrow. And, I mean, That's one that I really want to know if that was kind of
that shows a lack of respect for the head coach.
No doubt. Here's our Ankin Law Sports Talk Live poll question. And you can go to NBCSportsChicago.com/vote. It's right there on your screen. Are the Bulls better right now because they fired Fred Hoiberg? Again, give us your thoughts. NBCSportsChicago.com/vote. I'll weigh in on that, and I'll say to you, no, they're not.
It's a players' league.
But we'll find out. But right now, for me, no.
But isn't that okay? I mean, we're at the point where aren't they trying to not win basketball games?
No,
again?
That's over. That was that, last
oh,
year.
Is that,
that
over?
Was last
oh, it is.
No,
okay.
I mean, John Paxson went out of his way to say that this season would be about trying to develop the young players and win as many games as possible. No playing for draft positions.
But when all of those guys get hurt, doesn't that plan deserve to change? And if
you know what?
Why are we trying to eke out three extra wins in the season?
The question is, I don't know if they are necessarily better because I don't think we know how Fred Hoiberg would have coached the core when they're healthy at the same time, because the big three, Markkanen, Carter, and Zach LaVine, have never played together with Fred Hoiberg as the head coach, and we're never going to know how that would work. So I don't know that you can answer.
Well, you look
yes
what's going on around the league right now. Orlando's at 500. Sacramento's about the same. Some of these young teams that are on the same course that the Bulls are in have seen development this year because some of the teams have fallen back. I think with a healthy roster, the Bulls would have five or six more wins. They'd be close to 500. It'd be a whole different
story. The broader
story.
Question is, does changing coaches matter with this team at this stage of its development? I don't know if the answer is yes.
No, it's all about trying to find some veteran talent to go along with the young pieces. You can't have so many young guys on the squad.
Weren't you the guy that was all against Hoiberg for so many years and so long, and now you're like you're against his firing?
Because I'm not against his firing.
You just said that are they better off, and you said no, they're not any better off.
But it doesn't mean I'm against the firing. I did not think he was a really good NBA coach. I absolutely would change coaches. I just don't expect that this team all of a sudden is going to go from 5-19 to 19-5 the next 24.
They'll see a little bump, though.
There's
won't
going
they, Mark?
To be some improvement naturally. The irony of this is almost the exact set of circumstances we had last year when Nico Mirotic returned. The team was 3-20. They won 7 in a row. They played a good stretch of basketball over 500. Now with the coaching change and three of their injured key players coming
might
back.
Might get a bump.
They're going to get a bump.
The Boylan
no
bump.
No question about it.
All right, today at the press conference, there was some discussion as the media asked question after question about what we can expect in terms of improvement.
We're 27th in, I think, defensive rebounding. We've been in a number of games, and the last possession we haven't gotten, or in the last 5 minutes, we haven't gotten a ball that we needed to get. So that's a point of emphasis that we're working on. We worked on today. We're not going to Band-Aid it. We're going to work on it every day. So that's one. Transition defense is two. And then offensive execution, the items within the play we have to improve at, screening, passing, cutting. And those aren't things that weren't emphasized by Fred. Fred emphasized those too. But we have to grow in those. We have to get better with that. Our physicality needs to improve. Our attention to detail needs to improve. Our team is 24.5 years old. We're the second youngest team in the league. But we can't use that as an excuse not to get better every day.
Yeah, I thought one of the points he made there was it's not like those things weren't emphasized
right.
by Fred.
It's not the coaches.
Well, and then he said he's going to be more passionate in-game coach than Fred. You know,
so he's going to be screaming. He looks like or sounded like he already lost his voice.
That's
he looks like
too.
He was expected to have a shorter practice to accommodate the news conference because they were supposed to fly out at 3 to go to Indianapolis. Instead, he had a 2-hour practice. They were still working as John Paxson was making his way over to the podium. So he's going to be a bit of a taskmaster, especially early on.
Is that why? Did he have a whistle around his neck while doing that interview?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. He looks like the gym teacher with the whistle. It's like, do another push-up.
Explain to me how this will be received by Jabari Parker.
Well, that's going to be interesting to see because he made a point in his very first press conference to say that Jabari's going back to the bench. And Jabari, over his last 6 or 7 games, has played his best basketball as a Bull, especially on the offensive end. He's been scoring about close to 18 points a game during that stretch. And he's settled in nicely as a starter. Now you're asking him to go back to the bench. He's a sensitive guy.
But
he's going to have to sell him on that.
I mean, that's the point.
It's you could move Holiday to the bench.
You could, but I don't know. Are they benching Parker as much as they're just making the obvious move in with Markkanen coming back?
But they have to sell Jabari on it because he came in as the highest paid player, being told by management that you will be the starting small forward. And then that
got to play defense
that
now.
Disappeared after
because
a couple of
preseason
games.
If Jim Boylan does not pull Jabari Parker the first time he doesn't get back in transition defense, he will lose whatever credibility he has built up to this point.
Right.
Check out our stat of the day, driven by our great partners, the Chevy Silverado. There have been three head coaches fired in Chicago this calendar year. The third time that has happened in the last 32 years. The last two times, 2003 and 1986. Dick Geron, Bill Cartwright, Jerry Manuel. In 1986, Tony La Russa, Jim Fry within 8 days of one another, and Stan Allback, who they nicknamed the Washerwoman, May 19th.
No, you guys counted
that. That was what another coach in the league called when they were having a feud. He called them the Washerwoman.
The Washerwoman.
That's tough.
John Fox was fired in 2018. That seemed like it was a different era ago.
First 8 hours of 2018, probably?
January 1st, that morning. So, all right, do you expect when we get all the players back on the court that we will sit here as Bulls fans, look out and go, wow, that team looks markedly different?
I think they're going to be a lot better just by having better talent on the court. I don't think it's going to be because the coaching has changed or there's a new offensive system being implemented. I think
new
it's just
spirit, as Pax talked about.
You know
competitive
what?
Competitive spirit.
Spirit.
You mentioned a couple times.
It comes along with winning. You know, when guys are part of a winning program, they naturally play harder. They're playing for something tangible, which is trying to win basketball games instead of just trying to keep things close and showcase individual talents. I think as they start to win some games, you will see that competitive spirit come out a little
bit. How much of that is scouting, though? Maybe it's the football writer in me, but isn't that going to John Paxson and Gar Forman for the roster building and picking the right guys with the right type of character?
It goes hand in hand. I mean, basketball, a couple of players make all the difference in the world.
All the difference.
And when you consider that three of their top six players are out right now, they're naturally not going to be as competitive as other teams in the NBA. When you look at what they've done over the season, they've got five or six losses that easily could have gone the other way. So it's just a question of being, right now they're 5-19. You put six more wins on there, you're 11-13. It doesn't look so bad.
I had a former NBA coach text me today. I showed him the text.
You did, yeah.
He texted me and said, "This is all on Fred." He said, "Please." He has campaign, Shaq Harrison, and then he goes, "What a joke. The guy overachieved with five wins. This is ridiculous." All right, Mark, thanks, man.
Yeah, no problem.
Best. All right, it was supposed to be an easy win over the Giants. At least that's what the three scribes told me. But then the Bears struggled in every facet of the game. So was it just a trap with a showdown against the Rams looming? Are their struggles a bigger concern? Speaking of concern, when should we begin to worry about Mitch if he doesn't practice Wednesday?
For Chicago Sports Talk with Sizzle, crank up the heat and turn on STL. Host David Kaplan brings his no-nonsense opinion to the table every weeknight on the topics that are trending with our teams. Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado, weeknights at 6 on NBC Sports Chicago.
All right, Coach Wanstead is here. This is the final play of the game. There comes the – is that a zero blitz, Dave? I mean, they put a lot of heat on him, and he had to throw it up, and it didn't quite work out.
Yeah, you know, it's tough when plays come down to the last play of the game. I mean, you know, obviously the Bears converted one early in the year, but the odds are against you if it comes down to winning a game on a Hail Mary.
All right, so what was your takeaway from yesterday? Because Chase Daniel was not good. Matt's taking some heat for the timeout late in the first half. What was your takeaway?
You know what? Coming into the game – on my pro football show that I do with Hub Arkish and Dan Hampton, it's the first time all year, I actually picked the Giants to win. I didn't have a good feeling about this game, not because of the Bears, but because I thought the Giants were a much improved team. Think about it, up until the Philly game, they won two in a row with Eli, right? He was playing good, playing better. They got the running game going, Barkley's playing good. They were up by 11 the week 2 weeks ago against the Eagles.
They were up 19-3.
Or 19-3 in Philly. And then Carson Wentz gets hot and they lose the game. So in my mind, I'm looking at and saying, you know what? The Giants are playing at home. They're a good football team. This is going to be a challenge for the Bears. And I think they missed Trubisky and his plays on his feet. You know what I mean? I thought the defense did about what they do. I mean, but
if Mitch plays, they win.
If Mitch plays, he makes how many?
Maybe handedly.
How many first downs does Mitch make just scrambling? You know, with his feet. You know, I mean, and that's part of their. That's part of the Bears right now. That's part of their success. They missed that.
It's still not a catastrophic loss because of everybody else in the division losing. At the same time, a couple things that kind of emerged. Are you concerned about how well or how much they've struggled stopping the run in the last two games, because for the second game in a row, they had a running back who made, you know, had a pretty good afternoon.
Yeah, no. Saquon Barkley, I think, is special. I wasn't sure if he did him a lot, you know, following Penn State doing Big Ten stuff. I knew he was a great player. I didn't think he was be that good. I mean, you're talking about the NFC Offensive Rookie of the Year, you know?
Hands down. So as you go from that game in the first half, the Bears seem to be in control.
Right.
And they sack Eli Manning back-to-back plays, Leonard Floyd and I think Akeem Hicks.
Yeah.
And now Matt takes a timeout with 17 seconds left. Takes the timeout on 3rd and 23. They allow Barkley to run for 22. Fourth down, they get a conversion 9 yards, kick a field goal. Matt's getting ripped for it, and he said, I don't have any problem with when I took the timeout. I have a problem, my defense, on the next two plays.
Yeah, and I would agree. I mean, you know the percentages of converting a 3rd and 10? 3rd and 10 conversion is probably 20%. 3rd and 20, you know? I mean, no, it's...
But if you're going to do that, why tick it down 25 seconds?
I don't know what his thought was. I really don't know there.
He wanted to go for the block.
He said he wanted to try to block a punt.
Yeah.
How rare is that to set up a block
punt?
Okay,
let's take a listen.
Well, probably about the same percentage as them making a 3rd and 22.
Here's Matt Nagy again today talking about that very timeout.
Calling the timeout when I called it, that time, like waiting to the time and calling it, I'm okay with that. What I'm not okay with is the play that happened after that and the play that happened after that. Okay? So we need to get that fixed. If you call it right away, right, now, you know, they're in a position where maybe they run the same play, another draw on 3rd and 23, or maybe they throw it. But then if they throw it, then you call a timeout right away, they throw it, they get the first, and or there's a PI or something. Now you just save them time to go down and get what they got initially anyway at the end. So I told you yesterday the mindset behind it was to call a timeout with 17 seconds, okay, shut them down, and call another timeout to go after the punt. And what didn't happen was 3rd and 23. That didn't happen. And then the next play. And so when I called the timeout, that doesn't bother me when I called it.
Yeah, I mean, I get what he's thinking. I mean, you know, at least he didn't stand there and say, geez, I'm not sure. I wish I were taking it back. They did have a plan, you know?
People forget that was 4th and 1 after that. Barkley didn't get the first down.
Right.
And they were still out of field goal range. And then Eli Manning completes a 9-yard pass to Red Allison for the 57-yard field goal.
They had a lead. They could have gone in with the comfortable. They just let the clock go out. They got a little greedy.
I mean, Akeem Hicks even said it yesterday after the game, which was, hey, their offense hadn't scored at that point. Of course that jump started them. Then the Giants come out and score on their first two possessions.
Okay, the other thing too, though. But, like, that doesn't let the defense off the hook. I get that momentum can be a fickle thing, swing back and forth. But then the Giants scored their two touchdowns and two blown coverages by your veteran safeties, by guys who've started a lot of games. I mean, you have a guy running wide open down the middle of the field. You lose Odell Beckham Jr. in the end zone.
The other one's a trick play, right?
Yes.
I mean, the one was a trick play, right? Yeah. No, that was unusual. You're right. We had not seen that at all, even last year. You know what I mean?
It's almost as fluky as a defensive tackle scoring a rushing touchdown.
Yeah, almost. You know, almost.
So when you had 4th and 1 plays in your playbook, did you have a defensive tackle run and also a reverse pass? Both of those were in your playbook.
This is how quick you forget. We threw a touchdown pass to Jim Flanagan.
We
put him. He was a defensive tackle, just like Akeem Hicks.
In Green Bay.
And we put him in it. It was Green Bay because it was, you know, his dad was a player for the Packers and he's from Green Bay.
Right.
So we put him in at fullback and we threw him a little fullback pass. Yep.
How about that? All right, time for our James & Sons Fine Jewelers Diamonds in the Rough. It's been a rough go of it for Jordan Howard in 2018. He has just 3 runs of at least 20 yards this season, his long being just 25 yards. Here are some notable players who have had more 20-plus yard runs. His quarterback has 4. So does Bills quarterback Josh Allen. Tyreek Hill has 3. He's a wide receiver. Blake Bortles has 3. He's on the bench in Jacksonville. Tyrod Taylor has 3. Hasn't started since week 2. Wow.
They got those quarterbacks. You can't put those in there. What are we talking about?
A lot of quarterbacks.
When a quarterback scrambles, they're a man's coverage.
Anything can happen.
Exactly. Isn't that a low mean spirit?
Well, when two quarterback
runs, two of those runs for Howard were yesterday. Yeah. Going into that game, he had one, right?
Correct.
Because he was at 25 yes. and 22.
Howard's agent's looking into suing for negligence. I mean, this guy carried the ball three times in the second half, right?
And after, overtime.
Yeah, and overtime. After having a really productive first half, what happened?
Matt Nagy was asked about that today in terms of what he had the 14 points scored by the Giants in the third quarter. He had a couple tackles for loss by the Bears offense. But
six straight passes in one series.
I think it comes down to, and he said it today, Matt Nagy does not have much confidence right now in his running game.
Well,
it's as simple as that.
And I looked it up earlier. Seven runs by Jordan Howard went for 2 yards or fewer yesterday. When Nagy's sitting there at first and 10, you have to think in the back of his head, he's thinking, I don't want it to be second and 12. And it was that too often. He also said that Walter Payton himself could have been in the backfield on a couple of their runs and wouldn't have gained any yardage. Mm. So.
Wow. Coach, thanks for your time.
Oh, I'm done? I was going to give you a nice stat, too.
Give us a stat.
I looked that up. You know, the Bears, I always look at number of carries by running backs. Their numbers are toward the bottom, not last. But their running back receptions are in the top 10 in the NFL. So they're getting the ball to Cohen and Howard, mostly Cohen, but on the quick throws.
In space
and letting them run. So, a lot of guys lump that in with running plays.
See? You're the man. Thanks a lot. You're the best.
I have something for you.
There you go. Touchdowns and takeaways coming up at 6:30 as well with Coach. Hey, before we head to break, we want to send along our deepest condolences to the family of Tom Morrow. He died suddenly yesterday. Everyone knows about the recent successes of the Blackhawks on the ice, but it's the grassroots level that's made Chicago a hockey town. Tom Morrow bought Johnny's Ice House 15 years ago when it had just 60 men's league teams, only 60 families in the Jets Youth Hockey Club. Today, they added a second Johnny's, have five times as many families involved with the Jets, and men's leagues have more than doubled, all thanks to Tom Morrow's passion for both the game and the community. Tom Morrow is survived by his wife, Lisa, and their two children. He was just 49 years of age.
Cubs authentic fans, the My Teams app by NBC Sports is your home for Cubs highlights, articles, and more. For the best Cubs coverage anytime, anywhere, download the My Teams app today.
Okay, the college football playoff is set. So I asked the three of you, did the committee get it right? Because for me, they don't have the four best teams, but I understand what they did.
Georgia, I do too. I think they got it right. I think the debate will go on between the most deserving and the best teams. Georgia lost twice. They did not win a conference. They do not deserve to be in the top four. I think Notre Dame played its way in with their schedule. And Ohio State, you can't lose to Purdue like they did and get in the Final Four.
Yeah, you can't hang tight with Northwestern either like they did too. Look, I get the argument against Notre Dame, but look, they're undefeated.
You know what? If you're Georgia, don't lose to LSU. If you're Ohio State, don't lose to Purdue. You don't have to worry about this.
Yeah, don't blow the game against Alabama. All right, that is a wrap for Sports Talk Live presented by the Chevy Silverado. Touchdowns and takeaways with Luke Stuckmeyer and Wani next. Have a great evening. No show tomorrow because of Bulls basketball at Indiana. We will see you on Wednesday.